Welcome to the Retail Focus Podcast, a weekly collection of news, interviews, and information from the world of retail. Here are your hosts, Trent Kling and Leighton Kling.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Retail Focus Podcast for September 29th. And welcome to the shop.org podcast booth for those watching online, if we have the camera working, or those outside. On this episode, we'll talk about an up-and-coming farm and home chain in the northern U.S. that's benefiting from vacated real estate. We'll also talk about Ascena Retail Group's slightly positive earnings surprise and a new store format for Disney. Longtime listeners know we typically start out with the week's biggest retail news, but we're changing things up this week for shop.org and starting out with the first of two interviews on the show. Martine Reardon, former Macy's CMO and current senior advisor for retail and marketing strategies with the National Retail Federation. Martine, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I love being here with you all.
All right. So we'll start things off. First, can you talk a little bit about your involvement with the NRF and some of the things that you've started doing with the NRF since coming on board last year?
Sure. You know, the NRF has been a part of my life and my entire retail career. When I was fortunate to be in the CMO position at Macy's, I had a very deep relationship with the NRF where we really looked to the NRF to guide us through some, you know, whether it was understanding what they were projecting as the potential sales increase, where was GDP going, what kind of new technologies out there, and really as a guide to, you know, when I was starting to think about new marketing strategies. So obviously very, very close to the group here. When I retired, I had the opportunity speaking to Matt Shea, who is the current CEO and president of the NRF, and who said, you know, we could really use some, you know, strategic advice and really think about what are particularly CMOs looking for to help guide their strategies. And so I've had the privilege of working with them for the last several months and had the privilege of helping them shape some content, particularly for things like shop.org and other big shows like Retail's Big Show that takes place in January at the Javits Center in New York. So it's been a thrill really working with the team, very talented team here at the NRF, and really trying to think differently. As you are all hearing so much of the narrative around retail and shopping and, you know, what consumers are doing with their discretionary income, you know, a lot of people are saying that retail's kind of dead, and it's the exact opposite. And so what we at the NRF are doing now is really trying to show that retail is not dead. In fact, it is very much alive. And conferences like shop.org and conferences like the Big Show in January will show that it's not, because we have so many retailers who are really looking to hear about what's new, what's different, and how are big companies transforming to really meet the needs of the customer as the customer is becoming more educated. Digital, obviously, the internet, mobile devices have given the consumer tools to help them understand what's out there from a retail perspective. And so what we're trying to do is help retailers keep in pace and sometimes even ahead of the consumer, surprise, delight the consumer. That's what they want. You know, when I was growing up and going to college, you know, retail was the ultimate career for a young person coming out of school. In my opinion, it is still that same ultimate career. It is energizing. It's fascinating. There's something new and different every day. You know, there's innovation. There's transformation. And that's what we're all trying to do here at the NRF.
How have you kept a lot of those executives that you consult with energized in this changing landscape? Because as you said, retail certainly isn't dead. It's just evolving to the digital landscape. And you've helped a lot of times navigate these executives through this really changing retail environment. You noted some things specifically in the recent past that, aside from the conferences, more on an operational basis, what have you done to really interact to assure these executives at a very high level that retail is not dead, but that, in fact, you have to put energy into these new and upcoming arenas?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think the big difference is that we need to be really blending the digital and the physical together. And I think in times in the past, people were either choosing one side or the other. And it's not about a choice. It is about physical and digital together. And the companies who were recognizing that and putting their efforts towards that point, in my opinion, will be the ones who continue to succeed. I was very fortunate to be at a company like Macy's who really believed that and who worked really, really hard to make sure that physical and digital were blended together. Because from a consumer's point of view, she does not care. It's about a brand, and she wants to engage with that brand in any way she chooses at any time she likes, and she wants to go back and forth. So if it's about being on a site one day and then being in a physical store the next day, that is the choice that we all owe the consumer in this day and age. And again, the companies who do that will earn the customer's loyalty in the end. So part of what I try to do is really think of them as one. I don't care if you engage with me on a digital website, on a mobile device, or if you're physically going to come into a store. We want to make it easy for the consumer in the end. We want to give her what she wants when she wants it. And so that's really where I try to think about how I'm thinking about transformation and how we're going to continue to gain that customer's loyalty is just give her what she wants when she wants. Make it easy, make it convenient, make it fun, make it innovative, surprise and delight her as much as you can, regardless of the channel that she's engaging in.
Now, you talk about blending the physical and the digital. A lot of businesses, and particularly the businesses out here at shop.org, don't yet have the physical yet. They pretty much have the digital. And they're trying to make that leap into true omni-channel, which is interacting with the customer in a physical location as well as a digital location. What are some of the tips or tricks or suggestions that you would make to a digital-only e-commerce site to help them transition back into brick and mortar?
Yeah, great question. And I think you're seeing it with some of the digital sites like Bonobos, who has clearly figured out that physical is important as an extension of a brand. We had a great talk yesterday about how you can build brands online first to really get the brand awareness. But this idea of opening those physical locations in geographical places across the country where you know the consumer is aware of the brand is really the ones who win very, very quickly. For those digital companies who are a little bit smaller, who may not have a great path to open multiple stores at once, I always love pop-ups. I think you can learn a great deal from a pop-up shop. And again, you follow those same kind of guardrails about let's go where you've got great brand awareness, and now you want to build a physical space. It's almost like a party, right? It's a location where you get to invite people, they get to network, they get to socialize, and then you get to see the kinds of behavior that take place. That still then will give you some, you know, motivation to think about, okay, what's my next location? What's my next location? And then what's my next location?
Speaking to that point, great points by you there. As far as brand consistency, when a retailer is trying to extend into more of an omni-channel platform, can you speak to the importance of brand awareness and keeping a consistent message? Because oftentimes if a customer comes into the web space and they're familiar with the type of brand that only operates in e-commerce, can you speak to how different that physical space is and how important it is that they acknowledge that it's actually going to be the same business and it's the same overall strategic arena that they're going to be in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's really important to have consistency, not just in physical and digital spaces, but even in one store location to another. So not every store is going to be exactly identical as you think about your locations across the country or in a city. And in some cases, you may not want that because what you still want to have is some of that local appeal, right? And so, You know, architecture as a great example is going to probably be very different from the coast to the middle of the country. So there are going to be definite nuances. What you want to make sure are consistent is your philosophy, your brand philosophy, how you treat the consumer. Those things, in my opinion, don't change across regardless of what the physical location looks like or what your digital space looks like. There's an expectation when you're engaging with a brand digitally about how to navigate a site, and you've got a consumer who wants it quick and easy. Don't make me click 10 times, make me click once. The same kind of thing happens in a physical store. When I walk into an entrance of a store, make it easy for me to navigate. Make sure I understand if I'm coming in looking for women's shoes, which I do quite often, where exactly I go for those women's shoes. Don't make it be a treasure hunt. So I think those kinds of things really need to be thought about. But the service level and the kindness and the warmth and the personality of a brand must come out physically and it must come out digitally. And I think if you maintain the guardrails around your brand philosophy, I think you'll continue to do well.
All right, Martine Reardon, again, former Macy's CMO, now working with the NRF. Hey, thanks so much for joining us here in the shop.org podcast booth and sharing your wealth of retail expertise from those fantastic years you had at Macy's.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
We'll be back with this week's news and notes in retail right after this. Have you ever wanted to decrease your shopping cart abandonment rate or even increase your potential shopper audience? Well, traditional big box retailers like Macy's, of which Martine Reardon was a part for many, many years, Home Depot, Crate and Barrel, they do this by offering shoppers purchase financing options. But let's face it, these merchants spend a lot of money each year to offer and manage these purchase financing solutions for their shoppers. And that's not practical to do in-house for most small and growing businesses.
It certainly isn't. Well, now you can offer your shoppers the same purchase financing options as the big guys without all the hassle, headache, or compliance. Gainloads provides merchants of all sizes across many different industries the same big box financing tools without the cost or complexity. Simply download or install the Gainloans widget on your website or post a sign in front of your store, and you and your customers will start benefiting immediately from their increased purchasing power.
And again, the e-commerce retailers here at shop.org can connect with Gainloans and become part of their retailer pilot program at info@gainloans.com. That's info@GANELoans.com. Gainloans, a proud supporter of the Retail Focus podcast in the shop.org podcast booth. Well, we move on this week with top retail news, and we start with Sears Holdings. Not with them specifically, but another chain's benefit from Sears Holdings' struggle as the farm, home, and outdoor store Runnings grows to 41 stores with an opening on today, Wednesday, September 27th. The Kmart turned Runnings in question is located in Moorhead, North Dakota, which is in the Fargo metro area. In the past, we've discussed how the slew of closing Kmarts in the country and the associated open real estate has been a boon for Ollie's Bargain Outlet and other retailers of that ilk in the Mid-Atlantic and Midwest. But here we discuss a northern U.S. chain in Runnings that's using this old real estate, and they're using it repeatedly to their own benefit.
Certainly an amazing chain, and one that, Trent, we've never actually talked about before. But looking back in the past, Runnings began in 1947 in Marshall, Minnesota, actually as an auto parts store. So something a little bit reminiscent of the long-gone Otasco chain, some of our listeners may remember. After the opening today, they'll actually have 41 stores in total. So you can see, dating back to 1947, they actually haven't been that fast at growing of a chain, but most of their locations in Minnesota, South and North Dakota, Montana, New York, and New Hampshire. Runnings isn't necessarily a general merchandise retailer, but over the years, they've begun to carry a wider array of merchandise. So really trying to stem away from just being an auto parts store. They expanded from auto to farm to home and now carry clothing, sporting goods, furniture, and appliances. So again, more of a general merchandise chain and one that really fits the store footprints that they've been going in. We're going to be talking about a lot of white space with the closings of Sears and Kmarts throughout the country. And Runnings really is going to be able to take advantage of that if they want to expand out beyond that 41 store count. They lack the pharmacy and drug section and HBA, so that's something to note there. And since we are at shop.org, they do have an e-commerce presence. Their e-commerce presence is in line with farm and home stores, where only certain items are available for in-store pickup, and certain items are available to ship, very similar to Tractor Supply Store in that way. Not a quick e-commerce presence. However, they only promise that items will be shipped within 3 business days, much less delivered. So not much in terms of omnichannel there. Maybe some of the exhibitors at shop.org can actually help with this as far as the digital landscape is concerned. Now, with the background about the location we're going to be talking about today, Runnings, again, is expanding through this once old Kmart location.
And this particular old Kmart location began liquidation around a year ago this week. In fact, September 22nd of 2016, they closed in mid-December. This location in Moorhead, North Dakota, which again is in the Fargo metro area, 89,000 square feet, which is smaller than many of the Kmarts that are out there, but still fairly sizable for a real estate location to open up in retail. Apparently, this location was not actually owned by Sears Holdings or Seritage, which is the Sears Holdings spinoff REIT. And this is somewhat unique of the stores that they've been closing, as they've been trying to parlay some of this closed real estate into profits on the REIT front. We know this via the Moorhead mayor's office, as in February, they came out with a statement, said they were told by the owners of the building after Kmart left that the owners would actually try to fill that seat relatively aggressively, owners not being, in this case, Seritage or Sears Holdings. The closing of this Kmart left Fargo's metro area overall with just 4 general merchandise retailers of this size. And although Fargo itself is not big, it serves as a community that services the outlying area, really about an hour and a half. So 90 to 100 miles outside that area, they all use Fargo as their main shopping destination. So this is actually a low number of general merchandisers for a city of this size. And it left the city or suburb, that is, of Fargo, Moorhead, with 0 general merchandise retailers, which is one facet of the Kmart closings that we don't really talk about, because they're often located in these underserved areas from a retail perspective to begin with. Their closings typically are felt within a community a little bit more severely. Moorhead Mayor Delray Williams said of the closing last year, and I quote, "I'm sure residents will miss it in the community." At one time, Kmart had 4 Fargo area locations. Only one of those remains open. The land in the building for this particular location was assessed at $3 million, which is significantly more than a lot of the retail real estate is assessed at in that area. And so Runnings comes in. They fill this particular store location with, again, 8,900 square feet of Runnings, which makes it one of the larger Runnings around. But lately, they've been opening a number of locations above and beyond 80,000 square feet. We'll talk about that a little bit in the last segment. Leighton will have information on some of their other store openings and some of their planned store openings. One of the reasons we're talking about this in the first place on the podcast is that this series of openings seems to be part of a trial balloon for Runnings, because they're about 4 to 5 locations into this larger footprint. They've already renovated a handful of Kmarts and closed Walmarts in other markets. And if they can prove out that larger square foot location over the next year or two, it could open expansion possibilities in all of the other Upper Midwest and Great Plains locations that Kmart has abandoned. Just in this last round of closures announced in August, Kmart announced that they were exiting Topeka, Kansas, 3 stores each in Illinois and Michigan, and 1 store in Ohio, all conceivably within Runnings' potential expansion format. Part of the renovation for this store included adding LED lights instead of fluorescent lighting. So they're replacing the old fluorescent lighting. They got rid of all the tile on the floor that oftentimes will be located within a Kmart. They restored that to polished concrete, and they installed a new drop ceiling as well. And here's something interesting about Runnings' store concept that was leaked by the new store manager. Runnings actually isn't concerned about stockpiling inventory. Now, if they were a publicly traded company, obviously the inventory shows up on the balance sheet. Investors might be a little bit concerned, but Runnings is not. Runnings is a privately held company, and actually they're more concerned with having an ample supply given a run on a particular product. If a number of people from an area go after a particular product, especially their weather preparedness products, then having too much inventory in the stock room. So they actually built out the stock room a little bit as well. And speaking of that store manager, fun fact about him, actually worked in management at the recently closed Kmart there in Moorhead, North Dakota, and also at a Kmart that closed in Iowa in the 2000s. Big shout out to Forum Communications in North Dakota for that factoid. But Leighton, I think the larger reason talking about runnings on this podcast is to talk about the possible run ahead for runnings.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, you and I are both fairly bullish on the concept. Obviously, they are fairly small in the overall landscape in the United States, but certain areas within farm and home have done really well as of late. We noted a 4% estimated increase in pet spending from 2016 to 2017, and an over 10% increase already experienced from 2015 to 2016. We should note that overall farm expenditures did fall slightly here recently, 4.1% from 2015 to 2016, this according to Cornell University. We can argue that they have had greater efficiencies being borne out through different operations. However, most of this fall is reflected in labor and fuel costs, not equipment or supply expenditures necessarily, as farmers had difficulty finding labor in 2016 versus 2015. Also, running store footprint has grown by over 10% in the last 2 years, thanks in part to buying some of these locations or leasing these bigger, older Kmart locations out. Their immediate prior store opening was earlier this year in New York. That location was over 97,000 square feet, so a massive store to put merchandise in. This was actually an old Walmart store, an old format Walmart store that was closed when Walmart opened a supercenter across the street there. This was likewise true of the store number 37 in Liverpool, New York, another former Walmart, and store number 36 in Claremont, New Hampshire, formerly a Lowe's location. Both of these were over 80,000 square feet at the time of the opening, where many of the running stores were under 80,000 in average square footage. We see a positive future, like I said, for runnings, if only because their real estate flexibility. If you compare them to Tractor Supply Company, a company we already mentioned during this story, their stores average just about 16,000 square feet. Newer versions, however, are slightly larger as they begin to continue building out through their white space. There are a few Tractor Supply Company locations that followed a different route. The one in Fort Scott, Kansas, for instance, was built out of a former small format Walmart and cut down to around just 20,000 square feet from the original 90,000 that was originally offered. Honestly, if we look at runnings in a more pragmatic way, we could see that their main competitor could be Mills Fleet Farm, another retailer we really haven't discussed here in the United States. It was just announced in January that the Wisconsin-based Mills Fleet Farms aims to double their footprint in 6 years. These stores are about twice the size of an average running. So we're talking about Runnings being a fairly large retailer. Well, it looks as though this competitor is fairly large as well, almost double at 185,000 square feet in average footprint. And we see that these stores are about twice the size there. Differentiators might be for Runnings that they're smaller footprint so as to easily fit into rehashed real estate. We talk all the time about real estate offers, especially now with those Sears and Kmart locations, but also a lot of other retailers that fit that niche between 50,000 square feet and 100,000 square feet. Not only is redevelopment an opportunity, but a lot of these retailers like Ollie's Bargain Outlet will be trying to take advantage of this long-term proposition. We move on to Ascena Group, as analysts surprised with positive GAAP earnings on Monday and lower than expected same-store sales decline. This news is a welcome change for the embattled retail consortium, which has fought through legal issues with the teen retailer Justice, here recently issuing settlements to some consumers, and a slew of poor same-store sales showings. Earnings report for their fiscal fourth quarter 2017 came out, and if we look at the details, Trent, we have to be honest here, their same-store sales were still poor across the board with a negative 4% overall showing across all of the brands. Again, a company that holds several brands, and we'll talk about those brands in terms of comps, where in terms of the worst comps, they came in at Maurice's, negative 8%, while managing negative 4% for Justice, so that teen retailer doing slightly better there, but just negative 2% at Ann Taylor, and a 1% increase, a favorable increase there, at Catherine's, their only positive showing for this latest quarter. This was, however, against rather favorable comps with negative 4% same-store sales in last year's fourth quarter, so they had an easy quarter last year, and a portfolio adjustment program that included the closing of a number of underperforming stores. We have talked about them downsizing in the past, and that certainly hasn't stopped in terms of momentum, trying to reduce their store portfolio. In particular, Maurice's was at a negative 9% same-store sales in last year's fourth quarter. This brand has really been taking it on the chin lately. All that being the case, Trent, many analysts predicted a larger year-over-year fall. So despite the negative news, despite the negative media headlines, this was actually a fairly decent quarter for this struggling retail chain.
Yeah, as a whole, the company saw an 8.5% fall in revenue over last year's fourth quarter. But again, part of that was the store closures. And this actually beat analyst expectations, as did their non-GAAP or their adjusted earnings. Their adjusted earnings per share came in at a positive 5 cents. And the six analysts that follow Ascena Retail Group had them all predicted for negative earnings on a per share basis, an average of 3 cents per share loss. No analyst of the six that were reporting on Ascena actually projected positive adjusted earnings. But unfortunately for the embattled retailers we've talked about, that's where the positive ends. Gross margin is down. Buying, distribution, and occupancy expenses increased as a percentage of overall sales. Positive impacts from lease negotiations, we should mention, have not yet been realized. They're renegotiating leases on 399, or they're aiming to do so on 399 of their stores. So we haven't seen impacts from this yet. Selling, general, and administrative expenses also up to 30% of sales, 30.1% of sales, which is high for a fashion retailer. Here for fashion retailers, you'd look typically for the mid-20s. On the earnings call, we saw company notes from David Jaffe, their CEO. He noted that traffic was still down mid-single digits, but he said that it reflected a modest easing of their store traffic headwinds. This means that perhaps the store traffic decreases have bottomed out, or at least that's what the company sees. They've talked at length about, in prior calls, about all their cost savings initiatives. They said they're still on track to achieve this, looking for $250 to $300 million in cost savings over the next year or two. And again, part of this is the renegotiation of leases. You're looking at a renegotiation of around 399 leases, or at least an attempted renegotiation of 399 leases, particularly in markets where their sales are fairly poor or in smaller markets. They have initiatives in place to drive traffic back at their lowest performing brands, but these are proving to be detrimental to both their bottom and top line, which I found to be interesting. They've got this discount system here where they're actually decreasing prices at Maurice's, decreasing prices at Dress Barn, but they're finding this not to bring traffic back into the stores, or at least not in the way they thought. So what these discounts are doing is they're actually eroding, essentially, their margins, or eroding that top line revenue, and that's one of the reasons why you see sales decreasing. However, not all of their brands are in decline in terms of closures. They opened 4 net new loft stores in the fourth quarter. Ascena's one-time real estate requirements for loft stores have been removed from their website since they're no longer in an expansion phase, but we recall that these stores require a greater 10-mile population, the loft stores do, than Maurice's, and they average household income much higher in order to build a loft store, so that's where they're seeing expansion in that particular category. So still a positive there for Loft, and Loft was only down negative 3% in terms of same-store sales last quarter.
Trent, you noted, as did the company, of course, the erosion of revenue as a result of discounts at Maurice's that aren't really working to drive traffic like they had hoped. Overall, the budget retail portion of Ascena's retail portfolio now makes up just less than a third of overall revenue, due in part to the sales cratering at Maurice's and Dress Barn. There are some macro factors at work here. However, we noted this summer poor performance in small to mid-sized markets as a whole. From their latest real estate portfolio page, in fact, Maurice's targets markets with as few as 25,000 in the surrounding area in which they operate. To this point, momentum continues to be pushing into the negative for certain retailers who have a large presence in these specific markets, chief among them, Maurice's. Hibbett Sports comp declines of double digits in their latest quarter, 11.7 there. And Cato Fashion, August same-store sales down 10% year-to-date, down 15%. Right now. And you see Stage Stores comp declines 3.6% in their latest quarter, better than down 9.6% in the prior quarter, at least sequentially. Going forward, generalized softness in retail in these particular markets may make it easier for Maurice's to renegotiate some of their leases in strip malls and the C&D indoor malls. Again, a theme we have been talking about time and time again in almost every story that circulates around indoor malls. The fact that they are open to renegotiating leases now because they do not want white space. They want to keep those traffic levels. So even though those individual stores may be seeing traffic declines, those malls still need those tenants. And that's an extremely important facet of that dynamic. Commercial real estate is predicated upon having long-term lease agreements. And if you have to reduce the rate by 5 or 10%, so be it. Ultimately, these stores for Ascena are holding back the rest of the chain. We're bullish on Ann Taylor, Loft, and some of their others.
When we come back after this break, we'll be joined by Chelsea Ball with Retail Me Not. We'll talk a little bit with Chelsea about how Retail Me Not functions and, of course, about the seasonality of a number of Retail Me Not's initiatives.
As always, we may have a position in or against companies we discuss on the podcast. Do not invest in stocks solely on the input of the podcast hosts.
Back once again from the shop.org podcast studio. We bring in Chelsea Ball with Retail Me Not here. Her interview brought to you by gainloans.com, as is all of our content from the shop.org podcast studio. Well, Chelsea, thanks so much for joining us here.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for having me.
Not a problem. We're anxious to talk about something. This is honestly, Retail Me Not is in a sector that we haven't talked a ton about on the podcast. So if you don't mind, to begin with, for our listeners, can you give us a little bit of a rundown of how Retail Me Not functions, or how a visitor to the site might navigate Retail Me Not?
Yeah. So at our core, what we say is Retail Me Not helps retailers, brands, and restaurants reach their consumers. We have a mobile app and a site. So from the consumer side, we have very many ways to save money on anything you're looking for. In addition to site-wide or specific percent off or dollar off coupon codes that people are probably most familiar with, we've expanded our offering to include cashback offers and discount e-gift cards. So pretty much anytime you're looking to shop, we hope you're looking to save, and we hope you come to Retail Me Not first.
All right. So Retail Me Not is a site that could save consumers money were they to go to Retail Me Not prior to going to the store. So let's say I visit retail. I've been living underneath a mayonnaise jar for the last 5 years, and I don't know what Retail Me Not is. I go to the website Retail Me Not. How would I follow through on claiming a discount or a rebate?
Well, if you know specifically the store you're looking for, you can search for that store, or you can search our ideas pages. Seasonally, we update those. You know, most recently, we had back to school ideas. So if you're looking for backpacks, we've got a assortment of the best backpacks that you can find there. Click through the store, look at the best offers, and go from there. One cool thing that we are in beta right now with is a browser extension called Genie. It's available on Chrome in the Chrome store. And so if you're shopping, for example, at Kohl's and you have Genie installed, it'll pop right up for you and it will run through our best offers and really do the work for you.
So you mentioned Genie. What other things? Obviously, you're here at shop.org trying to promote the platform, and you've done a great job so far. You have a very nice purpley booth.
Yeah, we do love purple.
It is a very nice booth, and you've been attracting a lot of attention. Is there anything from the innovation standpoint that you've really been promoting, or do you have any promotions that are coming up that you're really looking to drive as a company?
Really, what we're trying to do coming up is just focus on the holiday season and really help retailers win. I mean, you both know the retail sector is under a lot of pressure in various ways. And we really look at our data, what we call first-party data. We have millions of users who opt into this and help define the promotional strategy for retailers to help them win the holiday season, which we all know is very key for everyone.
That's one of the things that, you know, a lot of people on the outside looking into Retail may not realize is you guys, at your heart, you can generate a ton of useful data for retailers that partner with you. So if I were a retailer now and I were going to Retail Me Not and looking for some type of a partnership, what might be some of the data points that you can generate to those retailers?
Yeah, what we really want to be is a strategic promotional partner. So depending on the goals that you have as a retailer, we can tailor our promotional strategy to fit you. And then we can report back on if that works. Recently, on the communication side, we went through a lot of our data and we released a report called Surprising Shopper Trends. One of the most interesting things we found from that, well, two things. One, people with pets are spending way more money than people with babies, which is fun for us to figure out. But the real one for retailers is that we found that having evergreen content, right? Always having some sort of promotion on because consumers expect that now. And then spiking that with 3-day short burst of promotional activity oftentimes results in a 3x conversion lift.
Wow.
So it's data like that that we can come back and say, really what you should do is 3 days of free shipping, not 2 weeks of free shipping.
So we should expect a lot more promotional activity during the holidays. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a lot busier from the traffic perspective. But then also consumers are consistently trying to shop around, trying to get the best yep. deals. How can you really relay that message through RetailMeNot to say, no matter what you're seeing elsewhere, this is the platform to go to?
Yeah. Well, we just hope that you see us and you know us. You know, we have a big audience and we have partnerships with 50,000 retailers. So odds are you know us. But really, yes, to your point, consumers this year are saying they're going to spend about $750 over Black Friday and Cyber Monday, which is up from last year. And what we're also seeing is that, as you know, the promotions are longer. The season probably really started already. And we have half of consumers saying they're going to shop before November 1st. So retailers need to be prepared for 4 months of promotional activity, which is a lot for marketing and budgets, which is where we come in with the strategic promotions to try to help creatively get those consumers without stretching that budget too far.
And you mentioned the 4 months of promotional yeah. activity. That can seem like a lot, but one of the things, and I'm on the RetailMeNot site uh-huh. right now, one of the things that you notice going to the site is you're not pushing Christmas, you're not pushing mm-hmm. holiday season just yet. Instead, it's fall savings.
Yep.
And hey, get the looks of fall. So it's a way to kind of, you know, push the 4 months of promotion without
little
making
pieces.
Customers feel like they're being sold to, right?
Yes. And you know, customers hate what they call the Christmas creep, right? But they're also shopping. So it's one of those things that we need to be strategic about in the way that we communicate with them and provide those deals and provide that visibility, but not hit them over the head with, what did I see last week? 14 weeks till Christmas or something insane? Yeah.
The retailers with the number of days counting yep. down towards
yes.
Christmas.
We don't need to go there yet.
Right. Chelsea Ball, our guest with RetailMeNot. Now, you guys do a lot in terms of seasonality, and it's not just, you know, we talk about the holiday season and stuff like that. Not just the holidays, obviously, mm-hmm. but other events as well throughout the course of the year. Can you talk a little bit about some of the seasonal pushes that mm-hmm. RetailMeNot has or some of the seasonal initiatives that you're planning on having over the next few months?
Of course. Yeah. So as you can imagine, we follow the retail calendar. So the biggies, back to school and Christmas. But, you know, there's also really great deals to be found around what you wouldn't really expect in terms of like Super Bowl, for example. You find really good deals around that time. Memorial Day and Labor Day, we see spikes of promotional activity because people have the day off and they're going to shop. So we follow that calendar and then we just really keep a pulse on what people are looking to spend. We survey our consumers fairly regularly to get a sense of what they're looking for and what they're trying to buy. An interesting trend we found when we were planning for holiday in our holiday insights guide is categories like travel and entertainment and lodging are up, and they're up for the Christmas season. So people are out buying, but they're not necessarily buying toys. They're looking for that more experiential purchase, which we've seen as a trend in recent years too. So I expect more on the travel entertainment front as well.
You actually answered a question that I had, so which
this
was going to be
a special ability. I
yeah,
have.
Yeah, exactly. You were reading my mind, but I was going to ask about specific services
yeah.
and how that correlates to the specific products, because obviously, if people are going to be traveling more, mm-hmm. they're going to be out with their families during the holiday season. How can retailers take advantage of those traveling customers? And given all the data points that you've brought in, how can you relay to the retailers, you need to be doing X instead of Y because people are traveling more, mm-hmm. people are doing this as far as a trend versus last year where maybe they were staying inside and just buying a TV and watching the football games?
Yes, certainly. You know, interestingly enough, we see a huge spike in food and dining. And in our app, we have a food and dining tab. And it's a great way for those specific retailers to, I'm going to say, intercept holiday shoppers when they're out and about. We have geofenced most major shopping locations across America. So we have the ability, you know, to catch you if you're walking into the mall and say, hey, what McDonald's has a special, go get some free fries, right? Pull in those food and dining customers too.
I'm interested to see because you guys have obviously a ton of data and you guys can generate all these interesting data points. We talked about pet sales
yep.
going up, which I'm glad you're seeing that trend because that was a trend we were seeing too, but we were just more or less guessing at it.
Yeah.
But one of the other things is with your site, you mentioned now cash back, mm-hmm. gift card deals, that type of thing. Are there promotions that work better for certain retailers than others that you found?
Well, I'm going to say yes, but I really don't know specifics on that because it all goes back to the retailer's goals. We are seeing big gains with cashback offers. Consumers are responding really well to that. And it's a type of offer that is a little bit differentiated and tends to encourage a higher AOV. So if that's the goal of the retailer, it's working out well for them.
So anything else on RetailMeNot that we can expect to see over the next... You mentioned the new browser extension, which mm-hmm. sounds fantastic. Mm-hmm. Any other technology in the pipeline that you can or can't tell us about? And I don't want you to divulge corporate secrets here, obviously.
Of course not. No, we are always innovating and trying to move forward, pushing on that mobile story. We know consumers are walking around glued to their phones, fortunately or unfortunately. So we are always trying to innovate and come up with better ways to make mobile better, faster, stronger for retailers.
Mobile is certainly important. And full disclosure for the podcast, I use RetailMeNot all the time, not just during the seasonal moments that we've been highlighting here, but a very good platform and something that has been around for quite some time. So you spoke of brand awareness. RetailMeNot, a platform that certainly has it because it's been in the industry for so long now, and you speak to the breadth of those partnerships. It's mm-hmm. certainly impressive.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Chelsea Baugh with RetailMeNot, thanks so much for joining us here on the Retail
Thank
Focus
you.
Podcast.
Happy to be here. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
We return on the Retail Focus Podcast with our final news story, Leighton, and we'll have our Looking Ahead segment coming up as well. But as shop.org is launched this week, and it's been a great conference and a great platform this week, so too has Disney released a new e-commerce site that actually melds together all of their brands. Additionally, they announced a new retail store pilot format rolling out to various cities over the next 6 months. Its design teams have been working on the remodeling plans for the last 16 months, nearly a year and a half, Leighton, to try and tweak some of these stores. Disney is looking to pilot these existing stores that will, of course, feature their branded merchandise, but will do so in what they're calling a flashier way. For example, a giant screen in the storefront that will look to promote featured items. Not only will they be leveraging digital to make the stores more interactive in the merchandising regard, but store employees will be helping parents celebrate kids' birthdays. So you talk about customer interaction, you talk about hyper-specialization. This is one way they're doing that. Is they're celebrating kids' birthdays by having them choose licensed Disney characters to sing them songs on that said big screen from the front of the store. So really a way they can drive that consumer experience, something that certainly Disney has been well known for in other platforms. But in terms of their retail, they've kind of struggled over the last, 6 to 7 years. Many of their retail stores in malls, and obviously we know traffic declines generally in some of the C and D indoor malls.
Yeah, revenue has declined for their retail segment. We'll get into those numbers in a little bit. But as for this recent plan, it looks to be 6 stores planned overall, with 4 already having been designed or in the works. As a more family opportunity, Disney is using their technology to showcase their parades in real time across the country on those screens you mentioned. So they're not only trying to have a more omni-channel platform, a more omni-channel presence, but they're also trying to have a better customer experience at those physical stores. This will obviously help with the store experience overall, branding and messaging, something you talked about. They have a lot of licensed characters within the Disney portfolio, but also families potentially getting coaxed by their kids to go to the more profitable theme park, something that is a massive part of the Disney business, something that is a notable extension of the retail side of Disney. This experience, too, will be interactive as can be with store associates, even offering certain treats to those watching these live parade feeds. So a lot going on here, a lot of talk about all the different options they have there for that in-store experience, something you really haven't thought of more. When you talk about indoor mall retail, this is something that is extremely creative. They put a lot of thinking behind this, a lot of capital expenditure. So I'm sure it's going to be more than 6 stores when you look to the long term with this Disney retail concept. It already looks to be a hit with certain events that have taken place thus far. Disney executives actually citing higher than normal traffic levels. So this is already looking to be a win for not only Disney in the long term, but also the local malls, something that is a theme for us here. We're talking about brick and mortar malls struggling to bring in traffic. Well, if their traffic is higher, that means customers may be shopping at other adjacent storefronts. Several months ago, we spoke of Kidzania's efforts to help bring malls back. And honestly, their childhood learning programs, they do bring adults back into the mall because they're anchored. The parents will leave for 2 hours, then come back and pick up their child. but they'll have shopped in the meantime. From a deeper financial perspective, from what we can tell, Disney stores are still profitable and have consistently used that strong brand messaging to make lasting statements to their core customers. Again, messaging, something that transfers over into all segments of the Disney business. Massive platform there. However, according to publicly released statements from the company, revenue from their physical retail stores has been falling and falling rather consistently and sequentially. During their last fiscal year, top line revenue dropped around 6% for the company. And thus far in 2017, revenue is sliding in the now double digit range, close to 10%, according to company reports. We often cite about Disney having strong intellectual property. I mentioned the licensed characters. And overall, that is certainly something the company will look to leverage in the coming years with Frozen and Star Wars. Those franchise extensions are extremely valuable. Frozen was a massive hit, and they're going to continue to have that as part of their portfolio in the years to come. These will surely be played out in stores, and Disney is sure to showcase them during those very live parades they're looking to have on those big screens in front of the store. So obviously, this is going to be a win for them. But you hear the new Star Wars coming out. They've always tried to take advantage of those characters. And from the pictures we can see online, it looks like anything that's featured, anything that's big in the news right now, that's going to be at the forefront of these stores.
It will be. And this is part of that customization that you can offer by not having a solid state display in the front of the store. You can really switch it on a moment's notice. For now, it doesn't seem as though the company is going to be closing any current retail stores in its portfolio. Not looking to gain any either. Most of what we're going to be looking at in terms of capital investments is going to be renovation. Of course, could subject to change in either direction, depending on where kind of malls break from here, whether the A and B malls continue to do solidly or if some of those decline. You know, Disney stores aren't located in a lot of the C and D malls to begin with. Disney as a whole, they're making a renewed, concerted effort to expand its omnichannel efforts. They want more store advertising, of course, but also, they want to seamlessly connect the physical and the digital, exactly what Martine Reardon was talking about earlier in the show, because customers can enjoy a larger product mix potentially on e-commerce, but Disney doesn't want that to come at the cost of their brick-and-mortar experience either, and that's exactly what they want it to be, is an in-store physical experience for consumers, especially consumers with children. Well, we'll cut directly into the final segment of our podcast, a segment we call Looking Ahead, where each Leighton and I tell you a story that we're keeping our eye on for the next week, the next month, or potentially the next year. Leighton, what's yours?
So since we are at shop.org, it's only natural that we talk about digital, but also brick and mortar, which is a theme for us at the Retail Focus podcast. Target is reportedly going to actually partner with Pinterest. And this partnership is going to be interesting because they're going to have a very large partnership, it seems, one of the largest retail partnerships that Pinterest has to date. They're going to be using the Pinterest lens along with insights from its massive catalog that Target has to showcase some of the new and trending products that they have. And I think this is a natural fit because when you think of Target, yes, they are a general merchandise retailer. They're a discount retailer. Their main competitor is Walmart, but it's actually looked at as a more elite retailer, one that really tries to get on the forefront of fashion. And I think Pinterest does just that. This is how things can get trending very quickly. And this is something that we've talked about more and more, is those influencers that are on social media. Pinterest certainly tries to take advantage of that. And I think this partnership is going to be a natural extension to really build out their apparel business and try to get those home goods as well out there to be seen by their core customer. And I think it's an extremely important partnership. The only thing I will say as far as this happening is that in the future, there's going to be, it's bound to happen, more retailers jumping on the Pinterest bandwagon.
Well, we've talked a lot about retail sales of alcohol and liquor products over the last 2 years as rules throughout the country are in flux and are changing. Well, we got word this week out of Indiana that actually the Indiana legislature is looking at changing beer laws in Indiana. Now, Indiana is one of those states where You can get beer in grocery stores, but here's the thing. You can't get cold beer in grocery stores, nor can you get liquor or many different types of wine. And what's more is most areas in the state are dry on Sundays. Only breweries can actually sell beer on Sundays in Indiana. Now, you might be asking, why are they changing the law now? What's the big onus? Is it a push by a beverage association or something like that? No, they have actually a secondary motive in mind. Because Indianapolis, if you'll recall from our discussion a few weeks ago, they consider themselves to be in the running for Amazon's second headquarters. And they worry that constrictive nanny state type laws may actually prevent Amazon from setting up shop in Indiana. At least that's what some people are saying. Now, and I quote from Patrick Tam of the Indiana Association of Beverage Retailers. He says that cold beer is a dangerous product that only liquor stores are responsible enough to sell. Never mind all of the other states that sell cold beer in stores, but there are rules, certainly, that are more restrictive once you get into the Midwest and the Great Plains in terms of liquor laws. We'll be keeping our eye on this because, obviously, it's very important. It can provide a huge top-line revenue boost to those grocery store retailers if they're allowed to sell strong beer that's cold all 7 days of the week. That really boosts sales rather than spreading it out. We've seen it so far in other states, certainly Colorado. Grocery stores have noted sales being slightly up after their liquor laws passed. So that's what I'm keeping an eye on over the next week or the next month. Well, one thing we want to do by closing out the show here, we want to thank certainly the folks at shop.org. Anna was great in getting this all set up. Chad is the first time we've had a producer engineer outside of one of the two of us in the history of the show. And one thing that's interesting that I don't think a lot of people realize about the show, this is the first time we've actually recorded a show in the same room. Over the 2 years we've been doing the podcast, we haven't ever been in the same room at the same time, and I think it worked out exceedingly well. I have less editing to do in any case. So a big thanks to shop.org. It was a lot of fun. I want to give a shout out to the guys in Lederhosen just beyond the shop.org podcast studio for distracting me during the entirety of the show. Also want to thank Gain Loans and GainLoans.com for being our presenting sponsor today. Again, for Leighton, I'm Trent. So long until next week on the Retail Focus Podcast.
This has been the Retail Focus Podcast. For more, visit our website at RetailFocusPodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at Retail Podcast.